Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Hi, and welcome to episode 14 of the Center of Everywhere. I'm Kelly Ash, Research Associate for the Center for Rural Policy and Development. On this episode, we are discussing the Artists on Main Street program, a program developed in partnership between Rethos, formerly the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota, and Springboard for the Arts. And this is how the program works. If you're a rural community with a downtown or main street that has potential but could use a fresh set of ideas and try and get people back into the neighborhood, you can apply to be a part of this program. If selected, staff from Rethos and Springboard for the Arts will come and help you out on planning and implementing artist-led projects. Assistance comes in the form of training, one-on-one technical assistance, and cohort exchanges, all focused to integrate the arts and creativity into addressing downtown challenges and opportunities. It also helps that these communities receive $20,000 for project funding and project implementation, and that's the first year. The second year, you get $10,000. I got an opportunity to sit down with Michelle Anderson, who is the Director for Rural Programming at Springboard for the Arts and one of the brainchilds of this program, as well as Sarah Swedberg, a city planner and director of the Main Street program in Willmar, Minnesota, one of the communities selected to participate in the program. Together, we discuss how city governments can connect with their local artists and work together, the core value of the program being lots of little, and how yarn bombing can bring people together. We're going to start with you, Michelle. I know, you know, Springboard for the Arts, your guys' mission on your website, which I always just really appreciate, is economic and community development organization for artists. And I think most importantly, by artists. I know I've really come to appreciate this as a rural researcher. You know, I always have a little bit of suspicion and maybe even some criticism of people that try to do research on rural areas, but don't actually live here and experience that. And I just feel like as an organization that's going to do something and to have all the employees actually be what they claim to be is so important in understanding the nuances of how to provide that that support and resources. And Michelle, I know, you know, Springboard for the Arts, I'm a board of directors. I have to admit that. So everybody knows I'm on the board of directors for that organization. I've been involved since the early 2010s. I've known Michelle for a long time. And I know Springboard for the Arts does a lot of different things. And your elevator speech is never really short because you do so many great things. But perhaps you could talk to us a little bit about how Artists on Main Street kind of fits into your guys' mission and vision as an organization and how that got up and running.
Absolutely. Yeah. So at Springboard for the Arts, we really believe that artists play a critical role in their communities and that artists can be really important players in problem solving, partly because they are able to think outside of the box and good at experimenting and taking risks. But I think even more importantly, because artists can provide experiences that help us understand each other and that build relationships, and also that get people to show up to conversations that matter in a community. And so as far as Artists on Main Street, it's really built off of several programs that we have done throughout the years in getting artists involved with local community development issues. And it's all about supporting artists to really revitalize rural main streets and downtowns. But there's kind of a second-hand mission in helping local leaders, people like Sarah who we're talking today, people that maybe haven't worked with artists very much, to really help them learn the processes of how to hire artists and how to collaborate with them and get them involved with community issues. So it doesn't do a whole lot of good to say that art is really important without kind of creating that two-way street and helping artists and community leaders really work together. So that's what the program is about. And we can share a little bit more about what that looks like throughout the conversation.
Yeah, and I know this program is in a partnership with an organization which was previously known as the Minnesota Preservation Alliance, now known as Rethos. Can you talk a little bit about how that just ended up being like a perfect partnership to implement a program such as this?
Yeah, so Rethos, they have a Main Street program that supports Main Street leaders, whether those positions are often with the Chamber of Commerce in a city or with city government. And so they have always, you know, understood the importance of creativity and art in strengthening Main Street. And so back in around 2017, Serena, who is their rural program director, reached out to me, and we had known each other for many years. So I think it was kind of a matter of time before we found a way to partner. But we talked about what it could look like to support their Main Street network in hiring artists for different creative placemaking projects. And we were lucky to get a significant 3-year investment from the Bush Foundation, which made it possible to really make sure that we could have a huge impact in the communities we worked with right from the start and then build from there. So I think what has been really special about that is that Springboard really brought some models and processes of how to train artists in creative placemaking practices. And then Rethos brought that connection to the Main Street leadership and business, kind of thinking about other aspects of Main Street development. And so we really were able to bring those two worlds together in a much more intentional way than I think has been previously possible.
So I find that really interesting that there's almost these two different worlds, right? You kind of have the arts world, and then you had more of like what I would call municipal government world or even county government world, right? And those worlds maybe didn't interact or overlap all that much. I know you guys have implemented this program over the past few years. You've been in how many communities now that you've awarded?
11.
11. And so far through all of the work, I know you do some of the work on the ground, some of the workshops and getting people trained up on how to do this. What has been kind of your big takeaways as far as working in rural communities and making those connections happen between artists and municipalities, both good and bad?
That's a great question. I think there, so much of the learning is really in a little bit of letting go, if that even makes sense. So I know that from Springboard, we really believe that so much of success in problem solving is about the process, because it's so important that people feel involved and feel included in kind of navigating the issues that their community is facing. And that's why artists can provide such an important step in community problem solving. So one of the, I think, most rewarding things that has been about artists on Main Street is working with those city and community development leaders that I think maybe have a more stereotypical picture of what public art is. There's nothing wrong with, you know, a mural that is put up in a prominent place or a public art sculpture. But really what we're trying to do is look at how arts processes can really help us think differently about what is possible, can maybe help illuminate assets that we've been overlooking for a while. And a lot of that initial training that we do is actually with the community development leaders. Before we even get artists involved, we're really asking some of the community development leaders that we work with to kind of try to step into more of an artistic process for a while. So that first day of training, we actually take them on what we call an observation tour of their own town. And I think one of my favorite things is seeing them challenged to refrain from explaining what their town is about, how something came to be, the history of a storefront, you know, like, oh, that fire happened here and now this happened. But instead, just walking through your downtown and appreciating it for what it is in that moment and not explaining, and just kind of sitting with it. And I hear a lot from those community leaders that's kind of an aha moment in this whole process, and it helps them then look at these artistic projects that get proposed, you know, further down the line. It really opens up their minds to the possibilities and gets them out of that kind of classic public art solution to really art as a process. So the letting go, I think, is really important. And I think that that leads to much more authentic and lasting results. And we've seen actually some of the Main Street leaders show a little bit of like skepticism for some of the projects that are proposed from artists in the early days. But what we do is we try to get them to a yes. We try to give them enough money so that they don't have to turn down any projects. And that means that everybody gets to try something in their community and show what they want to see. And it's these small, really small scale projects. So there's really very little risk. And what we find at the end of the year when we talk to some of the Main Street leaders is the projects they were most skeptical of and almost wanted to say no to are often the ones that had the biggest impact and that they learned the most from. And so that is the most rewarding thing. And it really takes a lot of intention in those early conversations to kind of get them to that place.
So. Oh, that's really interesting. Sarah, I know with the city of Willmar, you guys, the first year, so I guess just so everybody knows so we can ground the conversation, the program works is you apply to Springboard for the Arts and Rethos for this program funding. And the first year is $20,000 for projects. The second year is 10 and the third year is no funding, but at least some technical assistance to continue the program going. That first year, Sarah, of the city of Willmar, it sounded like, I think you got, what was it, 16 applications for projects and you're able to fund 14 of them. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Can you give us just a quick overview? Like, what were some of the projects and any of them that like kind of threw you off at first, but then went through and ended up being okay, like Michelle was talking?
Yeah. So the first year we saw a whole plethora of things. We actually didn't have any, well, no, I take that back. We had one very small permanent piece. Everything else was very temporary. Some of it, you know, might have been up for a summer and then it was done. Other things were just like a one-time small event for an hour or two. So we had everything from a couple artists creating like some really cool, like colorful interactive sitting spaces in downtown. We had a photography exhibit that really focused on just having a conversation about diversity. We had a dance troupe, did a kind of a Somali cultural event night. So we had quite a plethora, and our challenge, our focus, both in our first year and in our second year, have been to create everyday gathering spaces in downtown Willmar. We recognize that we've got some really great kind of institutional events, if you will, right? Like our town celebration happens downtown. We've got our Christmas kind of holidays celebration around Thanksgiving, but trying to really just create that purpose and know that when you come downtown, you're going to stumble upon something, whether it's a sitting space or a new, the high school art club created some fun little murals that you kind of, I call them murals, but they're, you know, maybe just a couple square feet, just on oddities of buildings, and kind of taking that idea almost of the observation tour that Michelle mentioned and like painting over it or creating something out of those kind of curious little quirks in buildings. And so, you know, again, just those things that you might stumble upon. The first year, you know, when it comes to like projects and thinking about things that we were a little bit skeptical about, I'd say the first year we were feeling generally pretty confident in most of the the projects we funded the first year. I actually think in our second year, one of the first projects that took place was yarn bombing on some of our trees in downtown. So it was like essentially creating, right, these like knitted scarves or socks, if you will, that then got put around like trees downtown. And I really wanted to fund it. I had seen it prior when I was traveling and different things in college. And I knew that it had a lot of potential, but I was really nervous because I didn't know how people were going to perceive it or how it was going to be accepted, like maybe within the community, or how my selection team was even going to think about it. Cause it had been tried before in Willmar a little bit, and it didn't really catch on a whole lot. But we had two occupational therapists slash creatives take on this project and really just drive in this idea of like creating purpose right now, and being intentional about just doing something together and kind of bringing a little bit of color and brightness to downtown this summer. And that project went bananas. We had multiple other community members that decided to take it upon themselves to yarn bomb things. They started like a little Facebook group just to share information. There somehow, I don't even know how, there was a family that was connected to somebody living in South Africa. And so somebody in South Africa then was inspired to yarn bomb their, you know, backyard tree. So that one, I just, yeah, that's the perfect example that I have where I was like, I have no idea what is going to happen with this. I think in my second year, I was much more willing to say like, if this is what these artists want to do, like I want to do what we can to support them and push it through, and we'll see, like, we'll see what happens. And I think also remembering that like, regardless of whether somebody had yarn bombed a tree in South Africa or not, the project was so successful. In just that process, especially in the middle of a pandemic, and just having this outlet to really drive home this idea of the arts and creativity being a way to really like find purpose and connection right now.
You know, I live 15 miles north of downtown Willmar. I go there frequently. It's the restaurant epicenter of my life because they have amazing restaurants in downtown Willmar, great coffee shop, great brewery. It's just a great place and a great guitar shop. I get my guitars fixed there all the time. And one thing I noticed over the past, you know, year that this program has been going on is that kind of talking about what you were saying is that none of the projects were essentially like permanent. And kind of going to what Michelle thinks too, is like, you know, we always think about arts and community development being like sculptures or something that's very permanent. But this idea that you just wanted to draw people to downtown to hang out, to get to know each other, to get it to be a familiar space. And you did that with, which seems to be of small but many kind of events, right? I think I saw that that's kind of a way you explained it once in one of the news articles that I was reading. And Michelle, I'd be curious, is that a pretty common strategy? You see a lot of the communities that are participating in this program and get grant funding, is this kind of small but many type events, or do they all kind of take on their own different strategies?
Well, yeah, at Springboard, our saying is lots of little. We think that a lot of little efforts to just kind of make space for gathering or beautify or add joy to a community not only has more of a impact, you see more of things, more of those efforts all over the place, but it also just means more people can show what they want to see in the community, and those smaller efforts can be ways to experiment with what works and learn from it and then build upon its success. So yeah, every Artists on Main Street community, the first year, we really kind of require them to only fund small up to $1,000 or $1,500 projects. And so that means that's usually around 20 different projects that unfold over the course of that year. And then after they've learned that first year, we give them a little more flexibility of how they want to use that funding, because now they have kind of seen, you know, what has had some impact, and maybe they want to invest a little more in a particular space or with a particular artist. Yeah, so that's a really important kind of core value of the Artists on Main Street program and of Springboard's approach to art and community development overall. So
tell me a little bit about how you select a particular community, because I assume you're not going to want to select a community that's already doing great, you know, the downtown's full of stuff. You know, it's got tons to do already, and you're just really kind of added value on top of what already is kind of an amazing downtown. It seems like you're actually selecting communities and downtowns that have a ton of potential, but just maybe not quite living up to it. And that's one way I've always thought about downtown Willmar. Growing up in this area, it was always this place where I was just like, look at this amazing place. But it has such a bad narrative around it that wasn't based in any sort of reality, and it just kind of evolved into this own thing. I'd be curious, Michelle, is that, you know, part of the eligibility, or, you know, how you guys kind of think about funding and choosing who you select, is kind of based on that potential?
Yeah, it's a lot about potential because we really want to see communities that know that they have kind of untapped possibilities within their creative community, but maybe they just have not had the chance to try in the past. There are some communities that have really established arts community or, you know, arts communities with whatever theaters or galleries. And there's some that where that arts community is a lot more informal. We've supported communities of both types, but really what stands out is when they admit they don't have the answers and they're really open to trying things. If a community, this hasn't necessarily happened, but if a community were to apply and say they want to use the $20,000 to do this very specific project, and they already have solved the problem, you know, that's not the point. The point is to bring artists into this and ask the artists to navigate this with them. And so when we see that in an application, then we know it's going to be a really good fit. And the other piece is just seeing kind of that cross-sector interest. So we also don't want all artists pushing this application forward. And we also don't want all community development leaders pushing it forward, because it means they haven't even, you know, had that initial conversation that I think is really important to get it off the ground in a successful way.
Sarah, I guess that brings up a question for you. I mean, I think when people think about Willmar, they don't think of it as like some sort of arts epicenter, right? But me living in this area, knowing this area really well, anybody that lives here knows there's a lot of artists in this area. And I think anybody in Minnesota could say that. If you're living there, you kind of know who they are and you know their involvement. From on the ground level, from your perspective, have you felt like the program has been able to connect the community or at least city leaders with artists better? And what does that mean as far as like future planning and integration?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think not just around like arts in our region, and I might mention this because I know that you live in New London, Kelly, but you know, not just arts, but just thinking about downtowns in general, I think when people are like, oh, that's where you go for that thing. It's so often like Spicer, New London, for those listening to two smaller towns north of Willmar, they think of those places, and downtown Willmar is like this, like, it's, I'll go grab dinner right quick and then I'll go home or whatever. I think it's this perception that's not based in any like evidential really hard facts, and it's just this narrative that's been created, and so that was definitely in the back of our minds when we were working on our application and when we were working on even still now, that we think about all the time is just how do we really tap into these other creatives that we know exist, that we know are there. And I think one really important thing that we've really pushed and that was helpful for us, even as a program, like in the training that we've received and the work we've done with Springboard, was just this shifting in, because we're dealing with lots of little, these projects are really attainable for people, and they're doable in this short amount of time. So you don't have to feel intimidated. You don't have to feel like you're this professional artist coming into this work to be able to participate and have some voice in what our community looks like. We're able to tap into these creative people that, in Willmar, we have a large Somali and a large Latino population. And I think it's really, it's not first of mind for them to think of themselves as artists, even though maybe they do some weaving or they do some dancing or some drumming or paper arts or whatever it might be, but to kind of reframe and say that we find importance in just creative thinking and creative process has really kind of, pushed that envelope of saying that we've got a lot of people that we can tap into. I think as a young local, like municipal employee too, I know that I don't have all the answers. And so being able to do lots of little and bring a lot of people to the table and say, okay, I know that this is the conversation we're having, this narrative about downtown Willmar questionable, not what we want it to be. What does that look like to you? How do you contribute to that? Because it's going to take, it's a collective mindset. It's not just one story being told.
So that brings up then this other side of things, which is, you know, connecting to the artists and giving them incentives to get involved in some of these projects, probably not a hard sell, but getting your city council or maybe even some old timer city planners integrated into these ideas, get them open and warm up to these ideas. What's that been like for you, Sarah?
I think I probably stepped into it a little bit naively, where I didn't quite realize the, like, this is how we do things sort of mentality that I was up against. So I was just like, hey, let's try this, or let's do this, or, we're going to submit this application. Like, we're gonna walk through the steps. And it's, I think because of this opportunity to show that we can do process, we can connect with the community members a little bit differently. I remember the phone call, Michelle, where I called and I said, okay, what if we allow for like video submissions? Because some people, maybe even if we have a short application, that might be still too intimidating or doesn't feel accessible to people. So how are we kind of continuing to always push the envelope of breaking those barriers down? And I think it's really just been a process. It's taking one step after another and just showing that it can be done. Because it feels intimidating. It's way easier to say, this is the process. Here's the form we have. Here's the agreement we get from our attorney. And there's that, this is how we're going to do it. But I think being able to just push that envelope and show that it can be done has been the most powerful. As the planner, I have kind of an advantage in some ways of saying, you know, here's the codes, and I'm not seeing anything that really would prohibit any of this work being done. I know a lot of communities have, are up against historic preservation commissions, and I think of like Faribault's example, where the murals all had to be like displaying something historic. Right. And so how do you start to kind of work through that? And we had the advantage of having this asset where we didn't have some of those code barriers that were in place. So being able to get in front of that and say, okay, if these barriers aren't in the way, like, let's take advantage of that fully. Scenarios like that, where it's just been really helpful to just kind of walk the walk and show that it can be done.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love the comment. It can be an asset of what you don't have sometimes, right? Michelle, what's been your experience as far as working with municipal governments, city council members? I mean, I assume if somebody, a community's submitting an application for this program, there's some support for it. But have you run into any kind of, you know, just cultural differences or barriers in terms of people being open to these ideas?
I think, you know, just like with any project, it has definitely had its challenges, and really we're always trying to approach that with how is this helping to build capacity? So that's a big reason the lots of little approach works so well, is that even if there is some skepticism, we can usually help the Main Street directors, like, you know, they're often going to the city council to get these projects approved. Our role is really in helping them kind of advocate for the learning that will come out of this process, and how to talk about the importance of these temporary kind of interventions in the community. I'm trying to think of an example. I mean, it's been really interesting working with 11 communities across the state, just to see the spectrum of experiences, because some cities, it seems like kind of anything goes and people really understand. And then others, they have to work really hard to educate and kind of bring people along. One of the ways that we try to get ahead of that is that when a community applies for Artists on Main Street, we ask them to identify, I believe it's 4 to 5 people that will go through an initial Artists on Main Street training with Springboard and Resource, and we make sure that there's somebody from kind of representing the city on that, because the last thing we want is for this to be this big surprise that suddenly has a bunch of barriers when it's ready to unfold. So it's really about bringing people along from the start. Even just something as simple as having the mayor or a council person come to the artist workshop and sit through that workshop with them and hear their ideas and meet them can be all the difference between getting those projects supported and approved and having somebody just, be really worried about the impact or what is really going to happen. So I will say too that in the third year of Artists on Main Street, which we did the application process just right before COVID happened, so it's been a little, the timing got a little messed up, but that application was the first time we opened it to any community across the state of less than 25,000 people. Previously, it was only open to artists in the Main Street Network. And I think the amount of applications we got shows how much city leaders do understand that this kind of approach to community development is important. So we got something like 60 applications. And this is from all over Minnesota. Unfortunately, we could only, select four communities, but that just shows the interest and the need. And I think there's enough people out there doing community development work that know that we need more creative and engaging and frankly fun approaches to community planning. And so they're seeing that this is a possible way to kind of to just kind of rewrite the script. So it's really exciting to see how much support there is out there.
Well, that's great to hear, because I know that's not always the case with new initiatives and programs that might be thinking a little bit outside the box, particularly when it comes to more government official types that, they got their ways of doing things, and it can be, as someone said, a ship trying to turn a ship, right? It doesn't just go like this. It kind of takes a long, slow curve around. So I think to wrap up this discussion, I would love to hear from both of you, and we'll start with you, Michelle. What is, if you're in one of those, you're having one of those days where you're in a great mood and you just want to talk about great things. What's the one story you love telling about this program that's happened so far?
Yeah, I mean, I have so many favorite projects. I mean, having been in 11 communities, the spectrum is just unbelievable of the types. But I honestly, my favorite stories actually come from those workshops we do with artists. And my favorite thing that seems to happen in just about every community is somebody comes up to Serena and I at the end of the workshop and they say something like, I'm not an artist, but, and then they have this incredible idea that is, right up there on par with what you would expect of somebody that, calls himself a professional artist to do. And so I think that was one thing I didn't get a chance to talk about is that we have a really broad definition of artists. And so when we help communities promote their workshops, we really try to encourage them to open up that definition of artists and make sure they also invite carpenters and people who sing in choirs in church, and just make sure we get the full spectrum of creativity at that workshop. And one specific one that kind of stands out to me is at the end of our first workshop in Mankato, a guy came up to me at the end and he owned the local paint shop. And he said, I'm not an artist, but I sell paint. And so he came because he knew that, maybe he could play a part in these projects. And so at that meeting, he met a few artists who had a really incredible idea for a mural. And I said, I kind of was like talking down on murals earlier, but this was like a kind of paint by numbers thing that anybody could come and paint. And so these artists worked with the paint shop guy and just seeing those relationships between artists and businesses, to me, that is really the impact of this program, is just the relationship building that comes out of it. And I think that's something that is a little harder to come by in rural towns, especially if maybe you're new to the community. And I think that is what these projects are doing, is they're building relationships. And we really need those relationships and we need to know each other and what everybody has to offer in order to respond to, you know, the challenges that we face, whether it's a crisis like COVID or a natural disaster or something. If we don't know each other, then we don't have the resilience that we need to get through those times. So every little project that happens, you know, whether it's the one that Sarah just described, or I think of another one that an artist did a project on the tree grapes in Faribault, and you know, the guy at the city who like was in charge of the trees, you know, he got really invested in the project, and he ended up you know, kind of helping design it and making it more of a permanent thing in the community. So I think that is something that we overlook when we think about economic development, is the importance of relationships in getting us to, you know, where helping us meet our full potential as communities. So.
And how about for you, Sarah?
Well, okay, two things come to mind. First, I think about the ripple effects and just how fortunate we are to have been able to go through this process. I think the Lots of Little affords the opportunity to say, maybe we don't fund 15 artists this year, maybe we fund 5, but that means we only need maybe $5,000, and we could, you know, we can figure out how to make that happen. So I think I just always get so excited about just the community interest in continuing to think about our challenges and our opportunities in this way. And then this morning I was just chatting with the director of our community integration center downtown. And he was sharing that last year, one of our projects was a sewing group that was started. And so these women from our Presbyterian church downtown went out and talked to several other women who maybe own businesses downtown or live downtown and said, first, would you be comfortable, you know, if we set up this space like in our basement, would you be comfortable coming into this space and just spending some time together and learning how to sew and working on some projects? And throughout that whole year, I continually, like, it felt like a weekly occurrence where I would see a pair of them, you know, maybe one of the women who was running the program and then one of their like quote unquote students, if you will, kind of out for coffee or maybe helping each other figure out where they were going to move to a new apartment or just like building these relationships. And I just found out this morning that some of the women that live and work downtown that learned how to sew through that group then offered to like help make masks earlier this year. And so it just, that group continues to grow. And I suppose as I'm thinking about it, going back to the question about like, what were you skeptical about? I didn't quite know how that program was going to quite work. But the ripple effects from that particular group have just been so intentional and so widespread. That's been a really fun one.
That's great. Thanks a lot. Sarah, Michelle, thanks a lot for your time today. I really appreciate hearing from you guys. You are fantastic leaders for rural Minnesota, and thank you for all the work that you do and spreading the message and keeping up the good work. So thanks for today. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.